So hi, I'm Leo from Graphistry. I have a bit of a GPU AI type and programming language design background. And with me is Sindra, who's more from the analysis investigation side. Yeah. And we're going to be talking about breaking bots, cheating at blue team CTFs with AI agent speedruns. In reality, this kind of work takes a team and takes a village. And so also, this is really in behalf of the rest of the Louis team, which is in turn part of the Graphistry team. And kind of want to say kind of like two thank yous here. One is this is my first time at this event. I'm more of a DEF CON type of person. You could probably tell by the accent. AI Village person. So this has been quite an experience. So thank you. And then also, thank you. Some folks here are from the Graphistry community, and I want to say thank you to you too, because that is what enables us to actually be here and do these kinds of things. I'm guessing most people have not heard of us. We've been doing a lot of free and open source GPU technology for almost 10 years now. Even if you haven't heard of us, I could almost guarantee everyone here has used some of the stuff we've helped build. So for example, most databases are using Apache Arrow. Now if you're doing GPU versions of the Python data science world, for example, increasingly NVIDIA Rapids is also being used a lot, and we helped start both of these projects. For people who do use us, for example, you can see a few years ago at AI Village, we had a talk about that picture on the top right, where we're mapping out the medical misinformation ecosystem that was using our GPU graph visualization stuff. We do a lot of GPUs, graphs, things like that. Something kind of cool this year might be of interest as well is GFQL, which is a new open source graph query language, where it's the first time you actually get GPU acceleration as an opt-in there. We'll talk about Louis in a bit, where we talk about vibes investigating. The other thing that I think that might be interesting from this community is if for the folks who do go to RSA in San Francisco every year, we also have an annual AI and digital security event. So we actually just opened the call for speakers. And so if you have something cool in that intersection, please submit. Let's jump in. So if anyone's kind of gone to a CTF page in the last year or two, you might have kind of seen, maybe not with this funny picture, but some version of No AI Allowed. And you go through the different CTFs, and it's just getting more and more common, and everyone's trying to figure out what they need to do. And if you talk to the organizers, it's actually getting kind of scary what's going on the back end. And actually, at the beginning of this year, we made a kind of an announcement that for the first time, we actually built an AI agent that was able to speed run Splunk's boss of the SOC, Blue Team CTF. And this is actually, for those who don't do CTFs, this is one of the most popular, and it's actually one of the most high fidelity representative of what actual SOC and incident response teams do. It's a really great cyber range, and the team does a great effort. But if you're the one organizing this, it's kind of scary to say, hey, an AI team comes in and say, look, the robots can do this. And to give you a feel what that looks like, this is where we were last year, at the end of the last year when we made the announcement. I want to kind of play a little video. It's a dramatization, so this is not exactly accurate, but it's like kind of like any good joke. There's a kernel of truth here that I think is accurate. So we're doing a comparison. Normally, in something like a CTF like this, you'll have probably not you'll have individuals, but it's mostly teams, and they'll spend like the entire day just camping out, kind of like here, and solving it. And kind of on the left here, you may recognize a certain individual, kind of doing the normal CTF flow, where you open up the whatever database tool or sim, like Splunk is obviously the Splunk search. You open Notepad or your crib sheet, and you're kind of iterating. And on the right, we have our intern basically pasting questions into the Vibes investigation environment. And unlike a normal CTF, she then just, it's kind of like in segments, and so you can do them in sequences, but that means you can start doing multiple sequences in parallel. So she just starts pasting them in. And you're starting to see that they're already getting answered. And what's crazy is one of our first results was we were able to answer most of the questions, but most of the answers were a median of 2.5 minutes. And so this actually was not a dramatization. This was actually real. So what we found was that, again, this is our result from last year. We solved about 3/4 of the competition. Most of it, questions 2.5 minutes. So basically, instead of a day, that if you actually run them in parallel, it's about 20 minutes. And so, you know, for teams going in production and using this to think through how they do like SOC and IR and all that, this is kind of the traditional force multiplier. But if you're the one running the CTF, you have to kind of wonder, what is it that we're doing here? And this is where we were last year. So before, that's actually not even what I want to talk about today. before we get into what I actually want to talk about, I kind of want to learn not just where you are, but where your neighbors are. So let's play a little game. So who uses generative AI for coding? Like imagine ChatGPT, Claude, Cursor, whatever. A little hard to see, but from what I can tell, not every hand, but almost every hand. All right, now keep your hands up. Next question. So you know, as you start going from ChatGPT to agents, and you start using tools like Cursor, you start using agents, but then you start getting better, maybe a few months in, multiple agents. So who uses 3+ coding agents in parallel regularly while you're coding? Keep your hands up. Oh man, do I see any hands still up? I see, oh there, we got some over there. And so these are, and I'm guessing you've been, and we can put your hands down here. Those are people who've been doing it for a while, it takes practice. Now, last question. Who does parallel coding, 3+ parallel coding agents when you're investigating security logs? 3+ at the same time. There might be some hands up, but I can't even see them. So,
I think there's one or two hands.
I think we got one, and I don't know if we have like 1,000 people in here, but you know, it's like rounding error, right? So that's what this talk is really about. Is how do we get from like what's already transformed for code, how do we do that for data? And CTFs I actually really love because, and I like the idea of like cheating with them AI because like what CTFs are a place to play. Like it's a place to experiment, it's a safe space. And to me, that's actually a perfect place to play with AI. And kind of not just, you can learn about security, but you also learn about AI. And then as you'll see in this talk, we don't want to just kind of pass, but we want to excel, because that's ultimately we're trying to get mastery as individuals and as teams. And the reason we as a company are doing this is we're interested in general, like how to use technology to accelerate investigations. And you know, we did GPUs, we do graphs, my actual PhD was on something called program synthesis. Didn't make sense to people before, it does now. And to me, it's all kind of part of that same investigative process. And so it's kind of understanding that to really like that like scientific degree. And a lot of what we're gonna talk about today is there's actually similarity between what we do with coding agents and what we do with what we're calling investigation agents, and Vibe, and I'll talk about Vibes investigating. And really when you get to the high quality, like the AA+ range, there's also a difference between them. And so we're gonna talk a lot about that. And then the last bit is, as an engineer and as a scientist, I really believe in open benchmarks. And I think CTFs actually have been very enlightening for, I think, where we need to go as a community, both anyone building these things, but also like anybody who's actually on the using side, that right now I feel like there's like a lot of marketing nonsense that's actually harmful to the community. And I think that's important for moving forward. So this talk is sort of in a few parts. I'm gonna talk a little bit about like the CTF because I think there's a little usefulness there. But an interesting thing is I'm gonna talk a lot about how you could do it yourself, just with stuff that's already out there. And I'll give you a feel for kind of how far you can get. But to really go like to the range that you'd wanna do in an operational environment, that'll be kind of that second half of the talk. And so it's a little bit more involved, but I'm gonna get into that. So the first thing is, why are we talking about bots, bots of the SOC, rather than other ones? We actually do all sorts of benchmarks, but bots has actually become one of my favorite. And to give you a feel, I'm guessing some but not all of the folks here have done the CTF. This is a real question from one of the bots years. What is the first executable uploaded to the domain account's compromised endpoint system? It's kind of a reasonable natural language question we'd want to paste in. But there are a lot of like sub-questions and sub-investigations here. Like, for example, who is the domain admin? And which is the compromised endpoint? So even though it's like a simple question, there's like a lot of like kind of rabbit holes we have to kind of go down here. And there are like 50 plus questions like this that we're going to have to do. And the questions aren't tidy. The database that we're working with is actually a full-fledged cyber range. And so there are over 100 different log sources and the kind of vendor tools with log recordings. And so we have a multi-source investigations where we have to pivot between them. Imagine like Windows logs or like AWS logs, all that stuff. And when you think about what we actually do in a SOC or incident response team, there's a lot of that, like, you know, triage, contextualization, timelining, pivoting, all that stuff. So, and from the open benchmark side, Spots isn't exactly open, but it is actually free. Like, you can actually download it, run it, and do the full CTF on your own. So that's pretty rare, actually, at that fidelity. So what we're going to do is, for the game that we've been kind of playing as the Bots Challenge, we're going to do a few things. So one is we're going to report scores, like, you know, F, A, whatever. And that's basically what percent did we solve them. They're about, you know, 50, 60 questions. So each question gives us 1 or 2 points. And then we're just going to sum them up, and that's our grade. But we're not like OpenAI, where I don't want to spend like $10,000 or $100,000 of tokens and whatever to see if I can solve the competition. And so we're going to like constrain ourselves in ways that kind of is representative of what we actually care about, and especially if I want to just deploy one of these and start investigating in production. So one is, for each question, we're going to cap it at 5 minutes. This is a proxy, for example, the number of tokens we're going to burn, how many queries we're going to push to the database, that kind of stuff. We also make sure that it's not like the AI, like the frontier models are learning everything on the internet, so we want to make sure that the model itself doesn't already know all the answers, because that's not interesting. Likewise, actually, we only want to use commonly available frontier models. There's a lot of quality issues where people fine-tune, but actually they fine-tune incorrectly, and that's not even what we're trying to learn about. We're trying to learn about the actual agent. And so, you know, we do fine-tunes at Graphistry, but for the game, that's the wrong view, and honestly, when people are picking up these tools, it just conflates and muddies the picture, and it's often done very badly or misleadingly. And also, one thing, note at the bottom, a lot of these slides, I'm going to kind of have like pointers to do it yourself. And so for anyone who wants the afterwards, that's pretty important. So let's start with baselining. So the first thing we want to do is actually fail. And we want to fail as hard as we can on this one. And so the first thing we're going to do is take a Claude code, so very accessible. You can just kind of get off the internet. And we're going to have it do the CTF. We're not even connected to Splunk. And so just on its own, has it already like memorized the answer? So it's just kind of like a baseline test to make sure we're not cheating too bad here. Interestingly, with the Opus 4.5, we actually scored a 12%. We didn't get a zero. So somehow something's going sideways. So I asked Claude to actually inspect itself, like, what the heck? And what it found was, for the questions, it was actually common knowledge. So, for example, what's the name of the tool we're using? Splunk. Okay, sure, that is a freebie. But others were kind of trickier, like, what is a certain CVE? I wouldn't call that common knowledge, but from an AI, that's actually, you know, did it read the internet? Does it know common CVEs are? So that was already kind of interesting that, like, just having a good model gives you a few points. And then the other thing was a little subtle here is we have cross-task communication. So remember in the CTF, you kind of have these like sequences of the challenges. It's sort of like chapters, and each chapter is sort of fresh, but within it, you kind of could use the previous answers to kind of shortcut the next ones. And so this is also actually measuring the quality of the model. Like, we like to do our evals in parallel, so instead of spending the time to wait for it to solve them one by one, we just run them all in parallel. So we actually do, at least for testing purposes internally, have kind of the previous answers, just none of the next ones. And so this is actually showing that like memory is actually pretty good. And I think this is fine. So 12% is like everyone gets like a free 12%, so just keep that in mind. The next thing that I was kind of curious for a baseline, where, you know, it's like a year after we did an initial result, what if you just spun up Claude code, connected to Splunk, and just used curl? That's it. You're just like, oh, it already knows how to use curl. Like, how does it do? So if I do nothing, basically. That actually, it fails, but it's a very impressive failure that, like, it, you know, I encourage you to try this. And what we see is basically with Opus 4.5, which is the frontier for Claude, they actually solved a bit over half of the CTF. And what's more, it solved each question about 2.5 minutes. That's actually really impressive. This is still failing. This is still worse than we were last year. But for doing almost nothing, this wouldn't have worked a year ago. And so I think we're going to talk a bit more about that. And another thing that I also just tried that I think is kind of interesting is we also tried Sonnet 4.5, the most recent, you know, step down. That scored a lot worse, so it's like 30%. I would have been ecstatic like 3 years ago, but nowadays I would refuse to use it. And the reason I think Sonnet is interesting is the top open source models are kind of where Sonnet 4.5 are. They're kind of, some things are above, some they're much worse. And also, there's like a big hardware requirement. And if you're going to do it in a team, you'd actually need a bunch of these. And so, you know, come talk to me afterwards about like how we were thinking about fine-tuning and shrinking down. But I think for the game, it's better to, for now, stick with real frontier models and not these open source ones. It's you're just going to be learning different things. But it is good. OK, so cool. So now we're failing, but we're failing impressively. So this is a good baseline. So let's step it up. One of the most important things when we're doing this is how we think about planning. And I've always really liked this this study. So if you look at this picture here, on the left is a control for some scientists just had a spider watched it make its web. And great, just a normal looking web on the left. But then for the other ones, they gave spiders different substances. So for some of them, it gave them coffee. For some of them, it gave them alcohol. And then one of them, it gave them LSD. And I'm going to leave you to go to the internet to figure out which is which. But it shows that like kind of what you do at this kind of planning stage and have your inputs there kind of matter for what happens afterwards. And so however good is good later, the plan kind of matters. And so out of the box, let's talk a little bit about what Claude does and how that impacts things. So Claude is actually fairly similar to other tools here. If for a fun time, you can take any man in the middle tool that does HTTP or HTTPS, and then you can actually watch the prompts going to the LLM as it's doing the competition. And what you'll find is most agents at this point will bake in something kind of like the React model that came out almost like 2 years ago now, 3 years ago. And this part, like, you can also find in open source libraries, but honestly, don't innovate here. Like, it's fine. And you actually don't want to do innovations here because the modern models are actually trained not just for normal answering, but they've actually trained to work well on this part of their input set is these, like, you know, React and chain of thought and whatever. Like, they know people are going to do those, and they know internally they do them, so they're actually fine-tuned or pre-trained on that. What's a little different, and I hadn't shown in the previous step, was we actually, there's a certain tool we want to enable that we hadn't enabled in the first result. And this is something that was a big shift, probably around the beginning of the year, the top agents, top coding agents converged on, is like the way to think about this chain of thought stuff is, or React stuff is that's very localized planning. Like when you're in ChatGPT telling it how to do things, you know, think through your work step by step, that's a very localized plan step and it's just kind of feeding back on itself. So one of the big shifts at the beginning of the year was everyone kind of converged on to-do lists. And so the idea is this, we actually can go a little longer range. So the idea is we take our agent, and then we just want to, like, whether it's a markdown file or like a linked list of to-dos, there's like a tool that lets us maintain that. So for example, you could plan out and create a sequence of to-dos. As you're running through them, you could check them off. Maybe you want to add in more to-dos, or maybe something gets weird and you want to actually rewrite the whole to-do list. And so enabling that, one more point here is, this is very native to tools, so as, when you're starting to use these tools, it's kind of happening behind the scenes. But what we actually do, both as a very, like I'll actually have about maybe 5 to 10 parallel coding agents running at the same time when I'm working. And one of the most important things I do to switch from kind of vibes coding to vibes engineering is actually I have very tight control of the to-do list. And when I'm thinking about how to control an agent, I'm actually thinking about how do I control the to-do list and how do I do a self-modifying to-do list and instructing it. And one of the things I have to do there is I actually have to take over how the to-do list works. This is important both for coding, but actually also for investigating. It's just now that once you take it over, you can actually do all sorts of interesting things here. And so in our PyGraph repo, we have the coding version of the takeover, and this works both for Claude and Codex. And once we do this, we have our first passing grade. And this is like almost no work, so this is really cool. So we hit 61% with Opus as soon as we turned on the to-do list, and that's actually pretty, this is still worse than we were last year, but for accessibility, I think this is pretty amazing. That's still not where we want to be, and so I'm going to, as we try fancier things, I think the first thing, it's better to have like a hacker mindset and try simple things first and just kind of see. And one of the dumbest things you can do is actually just try the same question multiple times. In practice, LLMs are at 0 degree temperature, they're supposed to be deterministic, but they're not. And so even at 0 degree temperature, you could rerun them just in parallel and just retry anything that it got wrong and see if it does better. And what we see is after 5 retries, we go from a D minus to a C minus. And this is like no work, basically. Also a little interesting is actually we plateaued on the third round of retries. Depending on the settings and environment, there's different amounts here. And also, I'm not actually going to report retry scores for the following ones because this actually violates one of our game rules. Because if I have to try things 5 times, I've broken my budget. So operationally, these things become questionable if you have to do retries for time and budget reasons. But it's kind of cool that it's a nice cheap hack if you really need to get to a C-minus, pretty easy. So moving to the second half of here, what we really want to do is get to an A+. And I want to give you an intuition of why, like, it was cool to show there's possibility of getting a C- and do this stuff at home, but when we're really trying to figure out this gap to get into more people doing it long runs, A+ really matters if you want to do this stuff all the time. And as an intuition, let's say one step fails at a 70% rate, like it has a 70% success rate. If we do 10 steps and you multiply that error out, that means we're failing about, or we're succeeding about 3% of the time. So, you know, if it's like succeed, and then fail, that means the full run's a failure and we failed. And that's not something I really can trust. I'm definitely not going to do that as an automation. And I'd be really frustrated as a user if I'm like in a Vibes agentic investigation environment and all the time, as soon as it does a few things, I have to come back because it just went wrong. And moving, like, let's say I want to I'm going to close the gap to 100% success rate midway. So I go from 70% to 85%. Then do it again, kind of the next 50% half the way there, from 85% to 90%. I keep doing that all the way until I hit 99.9%. It's actually really hard to do each of these jumps. So there's an intuition to go at a 90%. If it's every 0.1%, you kind of have to really pay for it. And that same 0.1% jump, if I'm now at a 95% success rate, that 0.1% from before, to make that same effort of increment, I now have to do a 0.02% jump. It's like the same amount of work. It just gets harder and harder the more we get. And if we really want to hit, like, let's say 99% success rate, that's kind of the level we need to be at, or actually another magnitude up. And one of the takeaways here is, yes, at home, I think it's cool that you can get like a C grade or even a B grade. But from this perspective of where you want to be for like long runs for vibing or for or kind of reliable automations, we are much closer to the start than to the end. I think we might need new benchmarks to make this a little more approachable, but hopefully that kind of gives you a sense of why I keep talking about an A+. Okay, so now if we have some techniques that I think analysts kind of need to own, or maybe we can build in systems, but today it's I think easier for analysts. So I want to talk about a couple. So one of them is planning. One thing we do with the planning is, in coding, it's sort of phased, where you have like specification, implementation, testing. It's a little kind of waterfall-y the way most people do it. Investigations work differently. And I think we have to start bringing investigation mentality into this. As an example, we might have multiple strategies. We don't have one spec. We actually have multiple strategies. We don't know what's the right way, and we actually want to give the AI control of coming up with those strategies are. We might have some hints, but it needs to kind of pick and come it out. And once we have that strategy, it needs to turn that into an actual like step-by-step plan. And then by the time we have granular steps, yes, we want to have like the normal agent figure that out, like that React chain of thought stuff I talked about, but we might have the like controls we care about for those individual steps. And even within there, like as an example of one of those controls that I found was interesting, is something like validation. So anyone who's used ChatGPT, you're kind of familiar with hallucinations. And in code, fighting hallucinations is sort of like you have a regimen here. Like, oh, well, we have static typing and we have unit tests. As long as like our changes don't break everything else, things, I don't know how much better they got, but it didn't get worse, right? We don't have that in investigations. We don't have that built-in validation, so it's a lot harder. But as an insight is from intelligence and police community is something called parallel construction. A way to think about that in a operational context, or that I think people are more familiar with, is when you have logs. Like, let's say there's like a real event that happened. You actually probably have overlapping sensors that saw it. Like if there's like a breach or something, maybe the operating system saw a piece of it, maybe the AV saw some of it, the network. Like we have lots of tools. It's kind of blind men and the elephant. They all see different parts of it. And so if we come up with a finding using one way, we can actually ask the LM, like, cool, there's a chance are that you can actually look at a different table or look at a different row or a different way of querying this, and if this was a true process that left all these like footprints around, we should have alternate explanations that back up the same thing. And this actually ends up being a lift, and I'll talk about that in a bit. But thinking about how, like from a redoing of how we think a lot about the coding world, but now in the investigating world, is actually pretty effective, and I'll give some numbers in a second. And I also want to make a point here. We find that we're working much more meta when we're doing this kind of work. And what I mean that, for example, is if I'm working in something like an orchestration or even how I'm running the evals for the CTF, I'm not working directly inside of Cloud Code or anything. We actually will have it control itself. And so in this example, I'm actually working in a Python world. Imagine a Jupyter notebook or whatever Python environment you have. We're actually telling Louis to create its own notebooks, create its own plans, and kind of control itself. And we're kind of show an example of this. You can imagine whether I did it from the command line or I did it from another notebook, I might give it something like, hey, visualize some data. It'll actually create this notebook. It'll do this multi-step investigation. This one we wanted to make a cool little picture, but one of the important things is it's both explainable kind of the normal ChatGPT sense, but important for some of the work we're going to do next is we actually get turn by turn as the agent does work. We actually get whenever there's any non-determinism, any interesting cleverness that the AI did, and or any tool call it made, we get that trace. We also, behind the scenes, get the full prompt sent to the LLM, and we get actually the server logs. And the reason this gets interesting is, let's go full screen, is we're going to use this to actually start, instead of manually working with the system, we're going to actually start automating it. And remember, we're trying to get to an A+, and all those little tiny increments, right? And it becomes sort of like death by 1,000 cuts. So I'll give a couple examples. Let's say we have 20 new interesting benchmarks or 20 new interesting questions we want to make sure that we're handling all the edge cases on. Or we update from GPT 5.1 to 5.2, and then maybe 5.2 with like the December checkpoint or something. And within Louis, we have about somewhere between 100 to 1,000 prompts. Like we're on the lower end of that now. I could totally see over the next 2 years, we kind of bump that up. Every time we have a model update, that means we kind of need to retune all the prompts. And not only do we need to retune all the prompts, we need to retune actually the code around them as well, just maybe their edge cases. And then if I was an investigation team, imagine I have a bunch of my own custom, my favorite prompts or my favorite skill files, if you're familiar with those, we need to retune those as well. But once we have what I just showed you before, we actually enter a world where we're not manually editing these anymore. And so just as how we do vibes coding to automate our coding, we're actually going to do AI coding of the actual, we're going to actually treat our code as an AI system and actually automate improving both the prompts and the code. So I'm going to kind of give you a feel for what that looks like. So before, the code and the prompts in our tests would have been human authored, but now it starts human authored, like bootstrapped, but we're now going to use AI to generate, make those outputs as well. So let's say I run our CTF through the agent, and then we get out a bunch of those traces and logs and prompts and all that. then we actually have, instead of us manually looking at what went wrong, we now have the AI look at what went wrong. And it's going to, you know, have some guardrails to make sure it's doing the right thing and do the targeted fixes. We'll actually validate that as well. But at the end of that, we'll actually have both the code and the prompts updated. We don't necessarily commit that right away. We might run it for a few times and do like human analysis. But this is how we're actually starting to think, both as developers, but imagine a detection team that has to do back testing or anything like that. Like as soon as we have prompts and all that, this has been really important for us dealing with a lot of that. I'm going to do one more, maybe two quick examples. One is this quote I really like. I'm going to switch from basically code to data. So there's a quote, all happy families are alike, but each unhappy family is unhappy in its own way. So this is, if anyone read Anna Karenina, it's a great book, but that quote stuck with me because basically every database, especially if you have logs in there, is misconfigured, but everyone is kind of done and misconfigured in a different way. And anyone who's kind of dealt with these will kind of see that. And what was interesting for us is when we look inside that, you can use something like an MCP, which is supposed to give you better access to a database, but something like the Splunk MCP, all it tells you is which tables, which indexes are already in there. But for Boss of the SOC, there's only one index. So like the whole point of the MCP of like giving this data's catalog, it told us something we already kind of know. There's one index called all of it. And so the agent has to kind of do all the work. And so what we end up doing instead is we have to kind of do like a really, like what I call like a fat MCP, and more technically, not just the boring data catalog, something we call a semantic layer. As an example I really like here is something like the concept of a host. So let's say we're looking at some Cisco network data and as part of the CTF. Well, is the host, does that mean like an email provider? Or is that maybe the sensor, that the Cisco sensor? Or is it you know, like some talk show host from the 90s who's now a podcaster? So this is kind of like a semantic ambiguity that it's kind of hard and normally traditionally you need to have people kind of deal with, but now we can actually have AI deal with this. And it's not the only case, and there are the other issues here as well. But today, for like Claude Code, it would have to kind of figure that out on its own, and so it kind of wastes a lot of time and kind of times out, and so this ends up being a big focus. And the last one I kind of wanted to point out here is traditionally, the coding agents don't deal with a lot of data. They mostly deal with a bunch of code, but even a bunch of code is what, like 500 files, like something like that. Well, one query in our world, you might do like a big query that's really heavy and comes back with 100,000 or a million results. You don't want to keep, one is you don't want to dump that in the LLM, and so, but you also don't want to run lots of queries against the database because you're going to like hammer the database. And so the traditional LLMs aren't really good at like bigger ones than you're seeing the CTFs. And so one of the things we realized is a lot of these agents are sort of text native, but investigations are more like data native. And so what we found was that getting the query result or keeping it as sort of like a database table or a data frame, if you're familiar with them, now creates a thing where we could avoid going back into the database. All the agents, it's not just one agent uses it, but all of our agents speak to each other by passing around these big data frames. And we can now do tricks like retrieval augmented generation on it, both semantic and regular, but we don't have to go back to the database for those. It's kind of like a best of both worlds. And so to me, that's like an example of just where vibes investigating and AI coding are just, they're similar ways, but you kind of have to do things differently. So kind of wrapping up, a couple points I think I want to make here. One is hopefully you have a bit of confidence that you can go like from an F to a C, which is kind of amazing. Just basically, you know, I did all my numbers over the weekend, basically. But AI coding agents kind of get you to that rough like failure break-even point. But if you actually want to really do well on these, I think there's a big role for people. So I don't care if you're doing analysis or automation. The human, you're seeing a lot of stuff that you just have to kind of live in it. If you want to go all the way to automation, some people I talk to want to do the interactive analysis. Other people actually want to go to the automation. in both cases. I actually think this Vibes human in the loop way is the way to do it and the starting point, because as you live in this world, kind of like in the coding world, you start building your own tools, you figure out how to do longer runs, and only then, once you can do those longer runs, do you actually get more confidence in the automation. So whatever your goal is, and honestly, I think you both are the goal, this flow. And I'm hoping you get a bit of a feel for how to think, start thinking more of an investigator mindset and how that changes, both as an analyst, how to do it, but also the technology. You could do it yourself. Kind of I'm happy to announce is we're actually creating a free version of Lui, so anyone could do this and kind of hopefully start at higher than a C minus. We haven't launched it yet, but just sign up and you'll get in one of the first cohorts. One last thing I want to, I kind of want to step back a little. And I think AI did not kill CTFs and SOCs and analysts and whatever, kind of as Martin was talking about in the beginning. I do think it's in a confusing time and a lot of new work. We're seeing a lot more automation, and it's kind of weird that AI disintermediates. But instead of being afraid of it, I think this is the right time to lean in and figure it out. Clearly there are benefits, there are clearly there are costs, and so our job is to kind of like figure that out. And so as an example, CTFs to me are still the great place to play. And so I think things, for example, could we have an AI-only track so we learn about AI and security at the same time? Or maybe we have an AI-augmented track where we kind of have of this human in the loop. And I think that would be true to the essence of a CTF, and you can kind of extrapolate. Likewise, I think for open benchmarks, hopefully you're getting a bit of feel for the subtlety of some of this work. Again, I like bots just because of it is a nice simulation of what real things are. When I hear about like vendors or teams who are kind of secretive or make up their own benchmarks and say they're doing good on their benchmarks, or they do things that you can't kind of run for yourself, or they do a CTF that's open but you actually can't access the data, to me that's sort of nonsense in marketing that I think is actually harmful to the community. So I really encourage you to push back to anybody basically not doing the scientific method here. Open benchmark, open data, like do stuff that you can actually run and reproduce. If not, it's just marketing, and I think it's harmful. With that, I want to say thank you, and maybe we open it up for questions.
Excellent. We have time for a few questions. Keep them short, please, so we can fit them all in. Number two, microphone number two.
To get from C to A, did you ever run an ablation study, meaning to find out what were the 1-3 techniques that actually gave the most improvement?
We didn't do full ablation, but what you're kind of seeing before was that recreation of certain techniques, like for example, the cross-validation was surprisingly big. The problem is, again, my slide about the magnitudes, I think that's fine in the beginning. That's good for like academic or do it yourself at home. That's not what I would bring into a SOC or a professional environment. It's good, but that was last year, you know.
Okay, still narrowing you down. So which were the 1-3 things? Ablation, you mentioned one.
Maybe we take that offline because it's a bit of a longer answer, but it's a great question though.
Microphone number three, please.
Hello. So I'm interested in, you mentioned briefly that you use LLMs to rewrite your orchestration or the prompts for your Lui, for your program. What kind of architecture or what kind of mental model are you using to build those meta architectures? I would say I find this really confusing at the moment. So what are your?
Yeah. I always encourage to start with the stupidest thing possible. My old friend Matei, you may have heard of Databricks, he had a paper called GEPA, G-E-P-A. I cited it in the slides. It's basically the worst thing and most minimal assumptions you can make where you just kind of do it randomly. So G-E-P-A is kind of basically what I showed a picture is like translating that to this world. Honestly, if you did the stupidest thing you did and made it work, it would be GEPA. You'd independently invent it.
All the way at the top, number 7, I think it is.
Yes, thank you for your great talk. I was wondering if this investigative approach would work in other data contexts, like, for example, leaks and finding out useful information in other kinds of data, but without this benchmark that you have in the form of a CTF.
So two answers. One is I like to use the word investigation because this isn't even really about cybersecurity. It's like anytime you have this kind of like large amounts of data instead of large amounts of code. So you think like an AI SRE, intelligence work, maybe
fraud.
Fraud is a great example. Yeah. Those would work there. I actually do have a pushback. So we actually do a training, and one of the top feedbacks we get from the training is evals is one of the most important things for doing this kind of work. So if you don't have the CTF, make one. And then as I showed with this optimization loop to actually really quickly improve quality, you have to do evals. Like otherwise, you're just kind of making things up. So I'm happy to talk more about that offline too.
And that's unfortunately all the time we have at the moment. You will probably find them outside because they have to leave quite quickly now. Please give them a very warm round of applause.